The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Yep, the San Francisco liberal with a gun. Well, hey, where you been there, Cowboy T? Didn't you say last year the Liberals Gun Corner was back? Yeah, I did. I was even on, get this, the Mark Levin show of all places for a short period. And this is where he graciously allowed me to mention the corner. Well, that definitely had an effect. Now, Mr. Levin and I don't agree on plenty of subjects, but, well, I do listen to him from time to time. Yeah, it's true, I do. Really, it's best to get as many perspectives as you can, folks, and that means also listening to people who you might not always agree with. I don't always agree with Senator Bernie Sanders either and his democratic socialism. Didn't stop me from listening to him. Didn't stop me from even supporting him in 2016 when he ran in the Democratic primary. Same for 2020 when he ran again. Shame he didn't win either one of those. I still wonder what things would have been like if he had. Well, anyway, after being on Mr. Levin's show with all those listeners, the internet line for the Liberals' Gun Corner got pegged, folks. I mean, so many people started accessing the website where these episodes live that the line just got full. Yeah. So I had to upgrade it to 100 megabits per second because of all the traffic. Believe me, folks, that is a very, very good, quote-unquote, problem to have. Well, shortly afterward, though, that resulted in something else. Seems my provider noticed all this traffic. Seems they didn't like all that web traffic, at least if it was pro-Second Amendment related. Remember, this was 2021, just last year. Yeah, they shut me down. They did exactly what Mr. Levin suggested they might do. They shut me down. Now, I'm not going to name the provider here, but I will tell you what I did about it. Turns out I'm an IT systems engineer. But, you know, there were some things I had to learn how to do, none of which are easy. One of those was how to build a WordPress server. This is complete with the MySQL database backend. And that's more easily said than done, folks, if you haven't done databases before, if you don't have a database background, which I didn't. I also had a lot of other things going on, like, for example, a physically injured wife that I had to help recover from her injury. That would be Mrs. BHC. And yes, she is better now. Also, had to find a provider that I could have some reasonable trust in. What does that mean? It means they wouldn't be likely to do what the previous folks did and shut me down when people came to my pro-Second Amendment website. The fact that I'm a liberal doing pro-Second Amendment advocacy? Well, I'm just guessing. Must have ticked them off even more. You know, a traitor. A heretic. Apostasy. Yeah. Well, I couldn't find such a provider that I felt comfortable with. So I became one myself. Yeah, folks, I now have a 100 megabits per second, commercial-grade internet line in my home running this website. I'm essentially my own provider now. That also meant I had to set up the email server, which I can do since I'm also an email server administrator. That's one of the things I know how to do as a systems engineer. That part was pretty easy. It also meant, though, I had to set up the DNS servers. Now, unless you do DNS servers every day, that's not for the faint of heart. Not only does it have to work right, it also has to be secured properly. There's a lot to it. Thank goodness for the O'Reilly book, DNS and Bind, you know, by Cricket Liu and Paul Alberts. It's a geek book. But that geek book, DNS and Bind, makes setting up DNS possible for mere mortals like us to understand. It's highly recommended if you do IT for a living. Oh, by the way, there's this little matter of the content of the website. took me some doing to get the contents of my websites back from those jerks. I have three websites. Two of them are pro-Second Amendment. One of them is the one that hosts these podcasts, www.liberalsguncorner.com. The other one hosts my reloading how-to videos, www.sanfranciscoliberalwithagun.com. All my websites are now being hosted on Raspberry Pis right here in my home, since they're very energy efficient. And I believe in energy efficiency. That's a good thing. Oh yeah, by the way, I also meant I had to rebuild my firewall as well to account for all of this stuff. Well, I'm actually pretty good at firewalls, so that particular part, it wasn't too bad. Well, the result is, now, pretty much the only way for the anti-Second Amendment forces to stop my website is to physically cut my internet line. And good luck with that. Those telephone poles are pretty high, and someone's gonna notice you and call the police. That someone might just be me. And with that, remembering that we are not just the Liberals' Gun Corner, emphasis on gun, but we are also the Liberals' Gun Corner, emphasis on liberal, we also need to discuss liberalism for a moment, therefore. Seems a whole lot of people are all up in arms because Twitter has unbanned President Donald J. Trump. This is after Elon Musk, you know, Mr. Tesla, the electric cars, Mr. SpaceX, the rocket company, after he bought Twitter, this happened. The way a lot of people are treating this, it's as if the nuclear holocaust are about to happen or something, listening to them. Now, I'm not a fan of Mr. Trump. I'm not. I never have been. But I'll tell you this. I am very glad for the end of the censorship of him. Yeah, you heard that right. Whoa, wait a sec. How could a liberal be glad to see Trump unbanned from Twitter? I mean, he's the Donald. He's Trump, right? Bad? Trump bad? Folks, it's a website. Twitter is simply a website out there, one of many. There are many, many more pressing things that matter to our lives, folks, than whether or not one person is on a given website. And it's definitely not the end of the world that he's unbanned from Twitter. I mean, who cares? It's Twitter. You know, let's keep things in perspective here. That's really important. Perspective, folks. Other things matter in life a lot more than that. Oh, but it's Trump! It's Trump! Yeah, so what? So it's Trump. Remember, I ain't too fond of him either. He ain't my favorite either. It's really that old Voltaire statement for me. It goes like this. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Now, was it actually written by Voltaire? We don't know. We do know that it was actually written by Evelyn Beatrice Hall in the year 1906, describing her view of Voltaire. It might be like one of those, you know, Admiral Yamamoto things, you know, the one about you cannot invade the United States, there will be a rifle behind each blade of grass. We don't know that he actually said that, but we know that he actually felt that sentiment from other things. It's one of the Voltaire thing is sort of the same thing. However, even if Voltaire didn't explicitly say that statement, remember, we know that he held it. Much of our own freedoms here in the United States are based on Voltaire's philosophies about liberty. The Founding Fathers absolutely, most definitely, shared that sentiment. That's why the right of free speech is the very first provision in the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment. The first. And the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, is right behind it to protect that First Amendment. Those two amendments were that important that they're the very first two. That right there says a whole lot. Well, turns out I agree with Evelyn Hall's writing about Voltaire. I've talked about this before, you know, when I watched that Phil Donahue show when he had the Ku Klux Klan on his show back in the 1990s. About three quarters of the way through his show, he turned to the audience and posed the following question to all of us. Quote, even though we may be disgusted by what they have to say. Do they have the right to say it? Close quote. As ugly as it is, as ugly as what those Klansmen were saying, the answer must always be yes in a free nation like ours. However, I don't know, these days too many of us liberals, we seem to forget that. We go right along with censorship of stuff that we don't like. Yeah, we even actively encourage it. Basically, if it doesn't follow the platform of the Democratic political party, too many of us want it shut down. We see this in our universities for the FSM's sake. My goodness, our universities! You know, that's where you're supposed to go to, you know, get an education, meaning exposure to ideas you might not have considered in the past. Yeah, that's the point of a university, folks. Let the ideas be presented, and may they stand or fall on their own merits. But that's not what's happening anymore. We've got groupthink now. We've got speakers getting, disinvited now at our universities because they're not toting the Democrat Party line. If you're a libertarian, forget it. If you're a constitutionalist, bye-bye, you're not welcome here. Even if you're a Green Party sympathizer, nope, no college for you. You're viewed as a traitor against the Democrat Party if you're a Green Party sympathizer. And if you're a Republican, you might actually get physically attacked and beaten by a mob. Yeah, I'm not exaggerating, folks. This actually happened to Andy, I think it's No NGO. He's an LGBTQ journalist covering, he was covering the 2020 riots throughout our cities, you know, a couple years ago. He got, and I mean brutally beaten by an Antifa mob, brutally beaten. And he's received death threats to the point that he had to relocate to London for his physical safety. And people on the left are cheering on this beating. They're cheering it on. Excuse me, folks. What the hell is happening in our country to where we cheer on beatings, brutal beatings like that? And I will remind you that Mr. No is not just a racial minority. He's East Asian. He's Vietnamese, I think. But he's also a gay minority. Yeah, the leftist Antifa mob attacked and nearly killed a racial minority, LGBTQ person, just because they don't share his beliefs. Well, hell, that's discrimination of the worst order. And folks, that ain't the America I signed up to defend. Not even remotely close. It's just... Folks, I can't even describe how disgusted I still am by that to this day. And I don't mean just the brutal beating, which was bad enough, but also that, even worse, that so many of us calling ourselves liberals were actually okay with it. That's what really scares me. That we, the ones who claim to promote liberty, were actually okay with that. And you wonder why I'm a gun owner. You really wonder why I believe so strongly in the Second Amendment? Well, if that doesn't give you an idea of why the right to keep and bear arms is so important, well, let's just hope it does give you that idea. I really hope it does. I'm married now, and there is no question whatsoever that I will protect my wife if she's attacked, and I'll do so with my own life if I have to. Of course, I hope we never have to face that kind of a situation. We don't ever want to see that. But if we ever do, then my job as her husband is very clear, and I will not fail her. Whatever I got to do, I won't fail her. Whatever I got to do. The Second Amendment matters, folks, and it ain't about hunting or sport, like some people want to say it is. It never was about that. It was then, back in the day, and it remains today, the final defense against tyranny. And this is happening. People getting attacked just because they don't agree with us. That ain't right, folks. It's just as wrong as the Charlottesville racists were in 2017. Remember that? Yeah, or the KKK crossburners, or the people who censored Martin Luther King Jr. back in the day. You remember reading about that? I hope you do. If not, you better. It was wrong then, and it's wrong now. It's just as wrong when we do it as when, quote-unquote, they do it. Voltaire, like Phil Donahue, was right. And that's why I'm back. I was not about to let people kick me off the internet, no matter how much they might disagree with me. For them to do that is un-American itself. And for me to let that stand, well, that would have been just as un-American. And that, folks, that's not who I am. That's why I'm back. Next segment, we're going to get into guns. Since I started working at the range again recently, seems appropriate given what you just heard. Well, a lot has happened on the gun side of things. We'll be back. Okay, we're back. A few months ago, I got asked. Well, okay, I got begged by my former general manager at our nearby range to come back. You see, I used to be a range safety officer, also known as a range master, a number of years ago. I had to leave that job for various reasons, but it was on, fortunately, the very best of terms, and they always welcomed me back. I could go shoot there anytime I wanted. You know, no charge. They did that for me. I even filled in here and there, you know, for them when they needed some help on the range. So, yeah, I was glad to help then. Well, after the whole COVID-19 thing and, you know, lack of people, good people to work there, they were short-staffed, very short-staffed. And they had a problem with keeping, you know, good managers. So they asked me back on a more permanent basis, this time as a manager. And, yeah, I missed it, so, yeah, I went back. And now, I'm back at the range as one of the weekend managers there. Yeah, I'm one of the weekend managers at this range. It's a great time, folks. It's really busy. It's very busy. But it's fun. It's also an opportunity that I didn't quite have, even as a range master in the past. Yeah. See, as a manager on the store floor, I get to do something new. I get to talk with customers a lot more than I ever did now. Yeah. I've learned a lot more about firearms over the years. That never stopped. And specifically, I'm referring to folks here who are new to the sport of marksmanship. Now, like you might imagine, at a gun store and range, we are all armed. Duh, we're a gun store. We're a gun range. And that most definitely includes me. I go strapped every day. Every day that I go to work there. And all my staff carry as well. Now, here's a little funny difference. All my staff carry semi-automatic pistols. You know, things like Glocks, Sig Sauers, 1911s, Berettas, and so on. Well, being Cowboy T, it shouldn't surprise you that I usually carry at least one revolver. And, yeah, sometimes two. Like, well, yesterday. I was at work yesterday. I was double-fisting? A .357 Magnum on each hip. So I'm the revolver guy. Usually it's something in, well, .357 Magnum. You know, like something like a Smith & Wesson K frame or a Ruger Security 6 or along those lines. But I'm also known to carry the Smith & Wesson Model 629 and .44 Magnum. Yeah, the most powerful handgun in the world. Well, it was back in 1971 when the movie first came out, of course. And back then it was the most powerful handgun in the world, at least production one. I've had this particular revolver, this Model 629, since 2009, and generally I load it with, like Dirty Harry actually did, I generally load it with .44 special rounds to keep the recoil down. That's one of the things they did get right in those movies, because .44 Magnum rounds, they can seriously kick, folks. But, you know, the revolver there, and it's really a nice revolver, it's stainless steel with a rosewood grip, and it does tend to start conversations. That's where I'm going with all this. people see an old school revolver and it doesn't look quite so, you know, tactical. And I do think that makes some people a bit more willing to relax and talk with me. Why does this matter? Well, people are coming into the range for the first time. They've never shot anything in their lives. Yeah, totally new. A lot of times there was someone who's going to have them shoot their, you know, polymer-framed Glock-style pistol. And a lot of times such a pistol is just too much for them. True story. Man came in with his mother and his sister. This man is big. I mean, I'm 6'4". This guy's my height and makes me look small. This guy's a mountain all by himself. He's got to be at least 270 pounds of solid muscle. Looks like a football player. Matter of fact, I'll call him Mr. Mountain here because that truly is what he looks like. Really nice guy, too. Really. He's almost a sweetheart of a man, if you can call a mountain of a football player man a sweetheart. Well, he wanted his mom and his sister to know how to take care of themselves. Even better, that family is black. Yeah, which I've been hoping to see more of all these years that I've been doing marksmanship. We're finally starting to see some diversity, some racial diversity here, more folks. We're seeing more brown-skinned folks, and especially black Americans. And it's about time, and I think that's great. Good, positive development here. Well, here's what's not so great, though. As a manager, I regularly check the range to make sure things are going smoothly. You know, make sure the range officers have everything they need. All that stuff you'd expect a boss to do. I saw both of these women back in the observation area. They were not out shooting. Yeah. So, Mr. Football Player Mountain Man was having a great time punching holes in the paper targets with his 9mm pistol. Well, I asked these women how they were, and they said it was just overwhelming for them. A bit too much. That's the part that wasn't so great. Fortunately, it happened to be a beautiful, sunny day. You know, it was a nice early fall day. So I invited them, you know, to come on out in front of the store for some fresh air. We talked. They explained it wasn't just all the noise. The noise mattered, but it wasn't just that. It was also that the gun kicked a bit too much for them, and it was just too uncomfortable for them. Basically, they were kind of afraid of that 9mm. I understood. See, first time I'd ever shot a gun was in the Air Force. This was during our initial qualification shooting. They had us on the M16A2. Yeah, that's right. The machine gun, shooting 5.56 NATO rounds at 25 yards. Now, it was in semi-automatic mode, but it was still the machine gun. It had the extra fun switch on it. Let me tell you, folks, if you haven't fired an M16 before, or even an AR-15, they don't kick a lot, but they're loud. Yeah. Huh, kind of loud like Trump. For someone, that's scary. For someone new, the loudness of an M16 or an AR-15 or any of that can be very startling. And then let me tell you, it was for me. Every time the next guy, the guy right next door to me would fire around, it would make me flinch. But we didn't have those stress cards when I was in, so that wasn't going to help me. And in any case, as my dad taught me as a boy, the show must go on. It's also why this podcast is back. So I had to finish. So I had to figure out when he was going to shoot, and I had to time my shot about, a second or two after his. That's how I got through qualification, even though it startled the daylights out of me every time that guy fired his rifle. And he wasn't doing anything wrong either, of course. I couldn't say anything to him. He was just doing what he was supposed to be doing. It's just the loud noise, first time. Well, I told these two women about that experience. They visibly relaxed. Sort of a, oh my God, somebody does understand. Really. Oh, I should also point out here that Mr. Mountain's sister is ridiculously pretty. She's just a gorgeous lady, about 30 years old. She's the ultra cute girl next door. So I can understand why her brother wanted her to learn how to shoot. His mom? She's older and therefore slower now, so she's not going to have much luck fighting off an attacker. So it's equally prudent that she also learn how to shoot. I'm all for this. So I didn't want him to stop. I didn't want him to get discouraged. So I suggested that, you know, a .22 handgun, you know, a good solid one like the Ruger Mark series pistols, or a Smith & Wesson Model 17 revolver, you know, something good and solid where there won't be a lot of recoil. I suggested, you know, that would be a very good way to start. Let your first experience be on a 22. Your first experience, yeah. Then, after you get comfortable with that, go up to, say, a 38 special, you know, like what my wife, Mrs. BHC, has. You know, something like a Smith & Wesson K-frame, or maybe a slightly even better, an L-frame, like the Model 686, or the Ruger Security 6 or GP1, you know, something good and solid. I mentioned Mrs. BHC to them, and they got even more interested. Oh, his wife shoots? Ooh, yeah. It works, folks. I explained how she'd successfully taught my mom, who was now in her 80s, how to shoot 38 special. This gave him hope. Then, after getting used to that, getting comfortable with that, I suggested, maybe then they might try Mr. Mountain's 9mm pistol again. The look of hope on their faces was just beautiful to behold. We also have had, by the way, a brief talk about something called, you know, Black Wall Street, since they are black. Turns out that Black Wall Street's been getting talked about lately. That thing, you know, in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Yeah, the firebombing there back in the day? You know, it's been getting talked about a lot. It's been getting some news coverage. So they'd heard of it. Well, it turns out my family was directly affected by it. Yeah, I'm a member of one of those families. So we talked about that a bit. And their eyes went wide open. It's like, oh my God, you're a member of one of those families? Uh-huh, yeah. I explained that black Americans, for historical reasons, should be the most ardent Second Amendment supporters. This is not a conservative issue by any means. I don't care what the media folks say. It's not. It is not partisan. We talked about the Deacons for Defense, Martin Luther King Jr.'s defenders. We talked about my dad. And we talked about, several other things related to that kind of thing. Both of them understood not only why this right needs to continue to exist, but also that, yes, it is a right, not a privilege. They got it. And as if on cue, apparently Mr. Mountain had finished and was wondering what had happened to his two companions. So he walks outside and sees us talking. They told him, they were all enthusiastic, telling him all about what we'd been discussing. His eyes went wide, and he joined in eagerly. Thank goodness. He also agreed, by the way, that a 22 would be good for them to start with, then work up to, you know, perhaps a 38 special, and then try his 9mm pistol again. That's a true story. Happened a couple months ago. That's just one of the many times I've had conversations like that with people. I cannot fully describe how satisfying it is to get people, you know, new to marksmanship and maybe a little afraid of it, to a place that they're really ready and willing to give it a good, shot. And when it's done right, man, the looks on their faces when they start hitting that center circle, it just doesn't get any better. I understand why teachers do what they do. You know that look on a kid's face when, you've seen it, when he or she finally really gets a subject? That moment when you see the light bulb going on? Yeah, that's what it feels like. Yeah, same kind of thing. Same thing. And to that end, turns out Glock came out with a new 22 pistol that they call the Glock Model 44. Well, you know, Glock's numbers never corresponded to the caliber of the rounds that they shoot. But so they, anyway, this 22 pistol is called the Glock 44. It's one of the first striker-fired 22 pistols. It is the same exact size as a Glock 19. Feels the same in your hand. Same grip, just lighter. Now, the Glock 19, that's one of the pistols that the cops use a lot. It's very, very popular. Well, this Glock 44 feels just like that, just lighter. And it shoots 22. Yeah. Like all Glocks, this one's easy to take apart and clean after a day of shooting, too. Yeah, it takes 5 minutes. We have one of them as our rental guns, one of our rental guns there at the range. And it sees a lot of use, and I recommend it to a lot of people. I've shot it myself, and the recoil really is very low. It feels good in the hand. Yeah, I know, there's a straight line there. Moving right along, it's cheap to shoot because, 22 ammo is cheap. And people actually really like shooting the thing. Yeah, I like shooting it. I shoot Magnum rounds, and I like shooting this little 22 pistol. And I thought I had all the guns I needed. Oh, boy. Well, this, folks, is how you get new shooters to actually enjoy marksmanship. You do whatever's comfortable for them. That's really what matters. And that's what I get to do now as a manager. I get to do a lot more of that than I ever did before. You start them off easy, and then you gradually work them up to what they're comfortable with. This works. I've seen it time and again. I've seen other instructors do it time and again. And the results don't lie. Just last week, a father brought his 10-year-old son in, and they rented that 22 Glock pistol, the Glock Model 44. Oh, man. The grin on that kid's face when he came out was like looking at a car's high beams at night, you know, flashing all them teeth. You know, I had to go get my mirrored sunglasses. That was one very happy, enthused 10-year-old boy. And his dad's face was pretty close to that, too. When we come back, we're going to talk about load development and specifically some of the new reloading manuals. I've just gotten my hands on a couple of the latest editions of these reloading manuals, and for those considering making their own ammunition, also called hand loading or reloading, especially in light of the ammunition shortage of the last 2 years, this is going to matter a lot to you. Stay tuned. In case you haven't noticed, we're still in a bit of an ammunition shortage. It's not quite as bad as it was now. You know, like it's not quite as bad as it was in 2020 and 2021, I'll say. But we're still not back to pre-2020 levels yet. That's why rolling your own ammo, if you can, is a really good thing. I do this on a regular basis. Got started back in 2009, and ever since then, I've never had ammo availability problems. Well, to do so safely, you got to know how to do it. That means, above all else, safe practices. The process is called hand loading, or reloading, your own ammo. I'll use the most common term, reloading. Several companies produce books on how to do just that. You know, describing the proper techniques and all that. They also include the components for assembling your ammunition. They specify components. It's very important to read. And I would even say study at least one reloading manual before actually trying it. And yes, I practice what I preach. Before I ever tried making my very first round, I studied my first reloading manual from cover to cover. I read every word in it. There are two that I happen to use the most often, and I happen to like these a particular amount. Those books are Modern Reloading 2nd Edition by Richard Lee and Lyman's Reloading Manual 49th Edition. I bought both of these books in 2009 when I first got started. As you might imagine, they've come out with updated versions of those books since then. Modern Reloading is newly revised for the year 2021, and Lyman just this year, 2022, introduced their 51st edition. Naturally, I ordered copies of both of the newer editions. Sure. Let's start with Lyman's book. My copy of Lyman's 49th edition is very, very well used. Basically, folks, it's falling apart. But that's a good thing, though. Yeah, it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Because, you know, that's what happens when you use the book a lot. And, yes, I've done just that. The information is excellent, and the load data in it is pretty vendor agnostic. Many reloading manuals are written by companies who also manufacture bullets, so their books are specific to their own respective lines of bullets. You know, Hornady's book focuses only on Hornady's bullets, Spears book focuses on Spears bullets, rather, and so on. Well, Lyman's book is the only one I know of, other than Lee's book, that uses a variety of bullet brands, along with various gunpowders and primers like the others do. Well, this is because Lyman doesn't make bullets. So they're free to be more inclusive. Hey, diversity, right? Diversity's good. Well, this new 51st edition, which I've also now read cover to cover, well, it pretty much follows in the fine footsteps of its predecessor editions. It has most of the newfangled cartridges, sure, yeah, of course. But I was really interested in the new powders, such as Accurate TCM, Accurate 11FS, and so on. A Superformance. The reason for this is that Lyman does their own pressure testing out of their own equipment, so it's a good check against what the powder companies themselves also report. I bought Lyman's 49th edition in 2009, shortly after I started reloading. I'd already had and read Lee's Modern Reloading 2nd edition by then. See? What I found out about Lyman's 49th, when I read it back then, was while it didn't contain quite as much actual data per cartridge as, say, Lee's book or even Hornady's book, the data that it did contain was very good and, I would say, prescient for what I was trying to do real world. Yeah, the data that they have turns out to be really good data. And it was with the data from Lyman's 49th that I developed most of my loads, checking them against Lee's book for sanity. I got good results from this. That includes, by the way, the 45 Colt Magnum loading that I use, which came straight out of the 49th edition's Thompson Center Contenders and Encore section, and verified in other sources, of course. That load is 22.0 grains of 2400 powder, Alliant 2400 powder, under a 255 grain cast bullet. Same as with Hornady's 250 grain hollow point XTP bullet. It shoots great. My load shoots beautifully. The 51st edition is a good manual by any objective measure, just as the 49th edition is, its predecessor. Oh, the 51st edition is now in color, just like the 50th edition apparently was. I didn't see the 50th edition, but apparently it came out in edition number 50. The 51st edition continues the tradition. It's in color. It now has actual photographs of the cartridges along with the drawings. Well, that's helpful because sometimes, you know, example, we'll give you an example. This for the 7mm Remington Magnum rifle cartridge. The drawing didn't always reflect the actual shape of the cartridge in previous editions. And, well, yeah, that includes my 49th edition. The 51st edition does also contain some of the newer powders, you know, like Lever Revolution, Superformance. Also has some of the new bullets. You know, for example, Burger bullets, and it's about time on that one. Turns out the good old 30-06, yeah, from 1906, the good old 30-06 benefits rather nicely from Superformance powder and the heavier bullets. And I'm talking 50 to 100 feet per second over most other powders. I've also found this to be true in real-world shooting as well. Take it to the range, test it out, yeah, it's true. So I'm glad to see these new powders in there too. However, I do have a few areas of improvement for the new Lyman book, the 51st edition. Yeah, they are as follows. Number one, what we call the lawyering down of some of the loads. Here's an example. That 45 Colt Magnum loading that I've been using for 12 years now that I just told you about? Well, they reduced that powder charge down from 22 grains of 2400 powder to 21 grains. And I see no good reason for this, given how well this load shoots. They're using the same primer, the same case, the same bullet, the Hornady 250 grain hollow point XTP, just like the 49th edition did. It works just fine, not only in Thompson Center Contenders, but also Ruger Redhawks and obviously the Super Redhawk 454, which is what I actually shoot this load out of. There are other examples of this lawyering down of the powder charges in this new edition. Number two, they should have included more powders with certain cartridges. Allow me to explain. 2A, I'll just split into two parts here. 2A, many of us have old military surplus rifles, you know, like the Mauser 98, the Mosin-Nagant M91 series, the British small magazine Lee Enfields, you know, and so on. In my case, it's the Mosin-Nagant. Given the totally understandable embargo of Russia that's going on right now, you know, Vladimir Putin and Mr. Putin's cronies currently in force, yeah. Yeah, the cheap military surplus Russian ammunition, that's not coming in anymore. Yeah, we're not getting that in anymore. Oh, and we can't get it from Ukraine anymore either because guess what? Ukraine hasn't been in a position to export any of their ammunition since 2014, ever since Mr. Putin first invaded Crimea. There's a whole situation for you there. You know, hey, fight on, Ukraine. You know, Russian warship, go F yourself. Well, therefore, because of that situation, for a lot of these, communist block rifles, these old military surplus communist block rifles, now we have to reload for them. The powders for the 7.62x54R Russian cartridge are not at all extensive in the 51st edition. The same goes for the 7.62x39 using the Kalashnikovs. The AK-47s? Yeah, and the SKSs. In light of the Russian embargo and that whole situation over there, that's something that would have been nice to see Lyman expand upon in this new edition, because we really need it. That's especially true given the level of attention that they gave to a lot of the new chamberings, like the 224 Valkyrie, the 26 Nosler, 28 Nosler, 6mm Creedmoor, 6mm PRC, 300 Norma Mag, 330 PRC, 350 Legend, and so on, and et cetera, ad nauseum. So it would have been nice to see Lyman expand on some of the old military surplus standbys, too. The Lyman book does not. The Lyman book does not include either of Accurate's new handgun powders, and I'm talking about TCM and 11FS at all in their Magnum handgun data. Like 357 Magnum, 44 Magnum, and such. They should have been included, since Lee's book, which came out a year earlier in 2021, does include them. Accurate TCM came out in 2017, and Accurate 11FS came out in, from what I could confirm, 2018. The 11FS powder is basically, H110 and W296 with a flash suppressant added. So they've had time to give these powders some analysis and development as well. That would have been nice. Number three, the notes section that was in the back of the Lyman's 49th edition, that's no longer there. That's kind of unfortunate because it was a convenient place to put down, a load information. That's actually where I initially recorded my load data. Be kind of nice to have that back. Number four, articles. The 49th edition had some very interesting articles about bullet types, firearm types, good gun cleaning, and so on. I found them most educational, even if I didn't shoot the particular cartridges or firearms that they were discussing. It was still good information that applies to pretty much any cartridge. The 51st edition, by contrast, has one article. And it's a good one. It's about progressive reloading, now that Lyman has acquired the Mark VII line of progressive presses. Yeah, finally, Lyman actually has a progressive press line. About time. The information in that article does apply generally to other models of progressive presses, too. Yeah, that's good. But it's the only such article in this edition. I don't know, maybe the authors felt there wasn't much more to write about? Maybe? Well, actually, they could have discussed, for example, how to apply ballistic coefficients to downrange ballistics. That's always helpful. It could be anything else that might be useful to a reloader. There's no shortage of topics to cover, believe me. So those are the areas of improvement for Lyman in this 51st edition. The big question is, would I recommend this new 51st edition to a reloader? A beginning reloader? Yeah, definitely. I certainly would. The information about reloading is just as good now as it was in the 49th edition, which means it is quite good indeed. For an intermediate to advanced reloader? Also, yes, but with a caution to also keep your older version around for certain cartridges. Yeah. Now let's talk about Lee's book, Modern Reloading, the 2021 update. Yeah. There are now three versions of Modern Reloading 2nd Edition. The first one. Every one of them has the now late, may he rest in peace, Richard Lee's somewhat shameless self-promotion. Oh, man. The 2021 update is no exception. He is a shameless self-promoter. I mean, he's almost like a WWE wrestler or something. Lee's book does have more powders per round in it, generally, than any of Lyman's editions. The folks at Lee Precision, however, have removed some powders, and I'm a bit concerned about them removing, and to me it doesn't make much sense for them to have done so. For example, almost all of the 38 special loads using Alliant Bullseye powder have been removed, as of, a whole lot of the Bullseye loads for the 357 Magnum, the 38 Special's bigger brother. Same goes for the 45 ACP. Why they would remove the traditional powder for 38 Special from the 38 Special section is curious. Turns out Bullseye is also the traditional powder for 45 ACP. So to a lesser degree, it's similar to one of the areas of improvement for Lyman's 51st edition. But it still has considerably more powder options per cartridge than Lyman's books do. The reloading information in Modern Reloading 2021 update is actually very good. Yeah, the instructions on how to reload, what to do, how to do it, that's really good information in there. You know, as long as you can look past the aforementioned gratuitous self-promotion of Mr. Lee. It is good info. He does know what he's talking about. The cast bullet data is especially helpful for those like me who do cast our own. It also has a very nice reduced loads section for rifle cartridges. It's aimed primarily at cast bullet shooters, but it's also applicable to jacketed bullets. I've used some of that data for reduced loads in the 308 Winchester cartridge. Yeah, with a bit of tuning and adjustment, it works pretty darn well. So, based on my experience, which of these books would I recommend for people? Well, for my initial loads back in 2009 and 2010, when I was first developing them, you know, while Lyman's 49th edition had fewer powder options, I found the ones that they did include to be easier for real-world load development. Yeah, I'm not certain that the same is true for the 51st edition in some cases. For other cases, yes, it is. But the really right answer, the best answer that I can give you is I would buy and use both in conjunction. And that's actually how I use the books, in conjunction with each other. It's always good to be able to compare load data, folks. Always. That's never, ever wrong to do. What this does is it helps the reloader to develop not just a safe load, but an optimal load. You can do it with just one book, yeah. But for safety's sake, I prefer to cross-check, especially if I'm looking at something like a maximum load. I have a few of those maximum loads, like, you know, for 357 Magnum, 44 Magnum, 308 Winchester, 30-06, and so on. So this does matter, yeah. So yeah, buy both and use both. But also, stay on the lookout for some of the older editions, too. This is because of the powder data removals that I just mentioned earlier, and also some of the lawyering down of the loads. If you shoot a lot of revolver cartridges, as I do, one of those cartridges is likely to be the 38 Special. That's probably the most common revolver cartridge. I would even say by far it's the most common revolver cartridge used in the United States and maybe even around the world. If you shoot semi-auto pistols, you know, the most common by far is going to be the 9mm Parabellum or 9mm Luger. But guess what? 45 ACP is probably a close second. So that means you might end up having 45 ACP as one of your cartridges. Think of all the 1911 pistols out there. Yeah, the 1911s, yeah. Uh-huh. And there are also some of the polymer-framed pistols that are chambered for the 1911, like the Glock 21, the Ruger SR-45, and so on. So that would be my caveat. Get the current editions, yes, but also look for some of the older books as well. Just remember to work up your loads carefully and watch for signs of too much pressure, as always. That's also why it's a really good idea to study the text in there describing how to reload. Safety first, folks. But Cowboy T, I don't reload. Well, if you don't reload, you might think about starting, given the continuing shortage of ammo. It's getting better, but still, it can be a little challenging in some cases. Let me tell you, once you start reloading, it is so satisfying to see what you've created. You can ask Mrs. BHC. It's even more satisfying when you take your newly crafted ammunition to the range and shoot it. It just puts a smile on my face every time. It never fails. I know my loads are safe, and I know that I actually have ammo to practice with. Yeah. That's hard to beat, folks. And we all know how important it is to develop and maintain your marksmanship if you're going to be a gun owner. That is your responsibility. Remember why we have guns, folks. It's about self-defense. Same as the martial arts. Same idea. You hope you never, ever have to use it to protect yourself. But if you ever do, then you'll actually stand a fighting chance. And that's a very good thing. How do you get there? Practice. Same way you get to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice. And to practice, you need practice ammo. And that's why you might want to think about reloading your own. Just like I do. Everything I shoot pretty much is my reloads. I don't shoot factory ammo. I shoot pretty much almost exclusively my reloads. Remember, folks, the key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you're at the mercy of the ones who would do you harm. And the tools for that are guns. And that includes ammo. Never forget that. This is Cowboy T signing off until the next time, and there will be a next time. Till then, safe shooting, practice often, and thanks for listening.